More Bulls Beat Now. Once again, here's Derek Sharp.
Here on the podcast page, since we will not be doing a Bulls beat on Friday, definitely wanted to give you a preview of the baseball opponent for this weekend, UTSA, where the Bulls stand in the standings with 2 weekends to go, and to give you some highlights of Tuesday's game against the Florida Gators, a game that was, as we talked about on the broadcast, plenty way more important to Florida, not that it was unimportant for the Bulls, and plenty of good things happened, but it was practically a must-win for the Florida Gators, who did defeat the Bulls 4-1. Why do I say must-win? Because they came in just a game over 500, and even though their computer rankings are right inside the top 25, which for a normal situation means you're headed to the NCAA tournament, well, not if you finish below 500. That is an NCAA rule. You can't get an at-large if you're below 500. And of course, if you finish right on 500, it's not like you feel great about your chances. And so the Gators, who at one point were 17-11 and 6-3, having won their first three conference series, and last year going 20-10 in the conference, which is amazing, and making it all the way to the College World Series finals, losing to, of course, another SEC team, LSU. Ironically enough, LSU is right now projected to not make the NCAA tournament with the Gators on the bubble, and certainly for the first time in a long time, the Gators would not be hosting a regional. With all of that as a backdrop, this was a must-win for them, because if they didn't win, the Gators would be 500 with 6 games left, 3 against projected number 1 national seed Kentucky in Gainesville this weekend, and then at Athens to play a Georgia team that, of course, is projected to be a regional host, needing to basically win both of those series, because if you don't, guess what? You're 500 going into the SEC tournament. So Kevin O'Sullivan, the outstanding longtime manager that has overseen 8 trips to Omaha in his 15 seasons as Gator head coach, managed like it was a must win. Started off pitching Liam Peterson, who had gone 4 shutout innings in their only win against Tennessee last weekend. By the way, Tennessee is now ranked number 1 in the country. And the Gators had dropped 4 SEC series in a row. Their losing ways, if you will, after a 6-3 start in the SEC, began getting swept at Missouri, which is the last place team. Now, all the games were by 1 loss, but that kicked off a 6-game losing streak. And yeah, the Gator team was feeling some pressure. But they also got out of a big jam in the first inning as the Bulls were able to load the bases with 1 out. Ben Rosenblum singled, got to second on a wild pitch. Drew Butcher, a full count walk. And then Rafael Betancourt hits a liner, a sharp one to left field for a single, so sharply hit that the runner was held at third and with the bases loaded. John Montez hits a grounder to third, easy force at home. Next pitch, Joaquin Moncay grounds out to third as well. That would actually be it for Peterson, so the Bulls certainly had their chances there. Didn't have a ton more. We'll give you a key sequence from later on. But the Gators would score in each of the first 3 innings. Only 1 was an RBI hit against Lawson Gately, and it's a guy who gathers up a stray RBI here and there. Jack Caglione does not get many nights off, and you talk about a healthy shift. You're not going to see many like this. 4 in the outfield, and Caglione, why are they giving him so much respect? If you haven't heard, as he takes a fastball in the outside corner for a called strike 1. The good old-fashioned 4-man outfield, and they are saying, please, push it to the left side as opposed to hitting a home run. He does have opposite field power, by the way. He sees that changeup by Lawson Gailey and comes up empty on it, 1-2. Tough guy to strike out. Recently had a 66 at-bat string without a strikeout. 1-2 to him, and he golfs it the other way. And Marcus Brodell is back on it, and it's out of here. That is kind of impressive. You are daring a guy to take it the other way. Actually, that was Bobby Boser. Shame on me. As the third baseman was playing left field for the Bulls. And Jack Caglione merely hits career homer number 67 and season homer number 27. And didn't really fully appreciate it at the time, although I think I appreciated it plenty there. But he actually hit that basically with 1 hand, so he's good. Plant High kid actually would single off the end of his bat later on, but the Bulls kept him off the board the rest of the way. However, as I mentioned, the Gators would score in the second and the third inning, but only 1 with an RBI, and that was, to Lawson Gailey's credit, a leadoff double in the second, and then a bunt single. Looked like it was lining up for another big inning early for the Gators, but it wasn't.
That just wasn't one bad weekend. They would start a 6-game losing streak. That could be 2. And score the run, you're fine. 4, 6. Snow sends it across, and they get him. That is a great play. Montez with the quick turn. No RBI for Yost. The bases are wiped. Sure, it's a 2-0 lead. But that is a great play started by Montez, and Snow really had to hurry that throw. So 2-0 Florida, but big play there.
And then the next play was a ground out. Again, no RBI on the third run, as despite two singles, there should have been twice a third out. The first was a drop pop-up, and then the Gators scored on a throwing error by Eric Snow. And man, that was it against the Bulls pitching until the eighth inning, when they would get an insurance run. But just one run in the meantime for the Bulls. Here's the rest of the game's highlights, including some stellar middle relief by a pair of Bulls, a home run by one of the Bulls' top sluggers, and yeah, an opportunity to make it an even closer game with what has been an issue for the Bulls. They have not been striking out a ton, but it seems like with runners in scoring position and a lot of their losses, which they've had several lately, they are on now a 2-9 slide, the strikeout in key situations. Here's the rest of the game's highlights, and then we'll preview UTSA.
I think they would hold off some of their bigger arms unless they have a chance to win this game. They're down 3-0, and Beavis rears back and throws a fastball past Donay, so two solid strikeouts. And Logan Beavis has been really, really good in middle relief for the Bulls. Those are coming off a three-run homer in Greenville last weekend. Four hits across the weekend. 1-2, and golfs that ball to the right side. Going back on it is Evans to the track, and gone! Boy! Bobby Bozer with some Oppo field. It is Oppo Taco Tuesday here at the park, and the Bulls are on the board. It is 3-1. 3-1, and that ball is hit slow to second base. John Montez does not have to rush it, though. Sends it across, and a 1-2-3 inning turned in by Mr. Kling. We have played six complete. And since the Gators scored in each of the first three innings, they haven't scored since. ERA is now ticked below 7. He has given up 4 home runs. Ooh, Rosenblum had a home run cut at that fastball, but it's that same pitch that Snow took, and he couldn't hold off and got a healthy cut at it, but it's 1-2. Bulls are 1-for-5 with runners in scoring position. Again, they had two chances in the first inning. Gators 1-for-7. 2-2 to Ben Rosenblum. Swung and a miss, and there's that slider away from a righty. Dandy pitch. Two away. Now here comes Drew Brutcher. Well, this is big. Brutcher struck out a couple times. You want Bobby Bozer coming up there with two on base, but Brutcher's got to reach. Full count pitch here by McNeil. Here it is. Swung and a miss, strike 3. And thus ends the opportunity for the Bulls. Actually, it was a little high in the zone on the replay on the video board here, and there wasn't much behind it. That's why Brutcher decided to activate the swing, and looking back on it, it definitely would have been ball 4. Caglione has been retired tonight. Also poked a dribbling infield single, and he golfs that to the right side where the Bulls had him most demonstrably played, and Eric Snow, the shortstop, fields it in a second base position. And retires Caglione, who grounds out to the right side for a second time. Two series left. That one's important, but the finale against UAB stands to be a big one. And that is a big strikeout by Corey Kling. He has struck out 2, and in 2 innings, hitless ball makes it 4 straight appearances for the freshman without giving up a hit, much less a run. Bulls continuing to hang around thanks to some outstanding middle relief. Let's see if I can discern who the pitcher is. It's a righty with a double-digit number, and whoever it is going to come in with a 3-run lead as Shelnut delivers that ball the other way for an RBI double. So for the first time since the second inning, the Gators score an earned run, and their first run since the third inning makes it 4-1.
So that's how it went on Tuesday night in Gainesville, but of course with their thrilling win on Sunday night in Greenville, the Bulls are still above the drop zone, if you will, in the American Athletic Conference. The top 8 make the conference tournament in Clearwater in a few weeks, and the Bulls right now are in a 3-way tie for 7th place, which, depending on how you look at it, is definitely a positive because 2 of those 3 teams are getting into the field in Clearwater. Memphis is a game behind. East Carolina is the top of the standing, 16-5. By the way, they lost 2 in a row. They got beat by a top 10 team, Duke, 5-2 on Tuesday, and believe it or not, if you didn't catch this stat, that was their worst loss of the year, 5-2. Their previous 9 losses, 7 were by one run, including to the Bulls on Sunday night, and the other 2 were by 2 runs. Now, the team the Bulls play next, UTSA, is comfortably in second place, but not as comfortable lately as far as their results. The Roadrunners, 13-8 in the conference, that's 2 games ahead of Charlotte at 11-10. Then 3 teams at 10-11, Tulane, FAU, and Wichita. 3 teams a game behind, and that's where the Bulls are in that tie for 7th, at 9-12. That's why that win on Sunday against the Pirates was so big. The other teams in the tie are UAB and Rice. Remember, the Bulls play UAB next weekend at home, so they will be able to control head-to-head against them. The team that's in last place, Memphis, the Bulls have head-to-head on. And even though the other team in the tie with the Bulls, Rice, has a sweep against them and obviously head-to-head, well, the Rice Owls finish up their season at East Carolina. So, in my opinion, if the Bulls win their series this weekend against UTSA, they haven't locked up a spot in the conference tournament, but they have practically. I mean, unless they get swept at home by UAB next week, and even at that, winning 2 or 3 this weekend might just be enough. If you're wondering, that Rice team is hosting FAU this weekend. Obviously, we'll keep an eye on the scoreboard for you. But as far as the Roadrunners go, it's a team that actually was below 500 going into conference play, but then they stunned East Carolina, winning 2 of 3 in San Antonio, including a close one in the finale, 6-5. Followed that up by going to Baylor and winning. And by the way, Baylor is the last place team in the Big 12, but still, it's a win at Baylor. And then they go to Tulane and sweep the Green Wave. So, again, below 500 by just a game heading into conference play, their first year in the American, and all of a sudden they're 5-1, and they win 6 games in a row. They would come back home, take 2 or 3 from Charlotte, the last 2 in run rule fashion. And then after a close loss to Texas A&M, which, as you know, pretty darn good team, they go to Memphis and win yet another series. They were 11-4 in their first 4 series. Mind you, the Roadrunners had not made the NCAA tournament their entire 10 years in the Conference USA. Their last NCAA tournament trip was their lone season in the WAC. That was back in 2013. And that's a funny enough story, as that was their 3rd NCAA tournament trip and their first since 2005, a year where they, by the way, were a below 500 team. They would turn around the next year and be a 37-22 team and not get in. It's a team that's never won an NCAA tournament game in their 3 trips. However, their last 2 years, again, despite not making the NCAA, they went 38-20 and last year 38-19. So they've had success recently. But after that red-hot start in conference play, again, they were sub 500 before taking those games against East Carolina. Now they're 27-20. They have lost their last 2 series. And guess who got them first? Their old standing rival, Rice, which swept the Bulls, then turned around and hosted UTSA, got them in a wild 10-inning game where the Roadrunners came back from down 4 late to force extras. And then last weekend, win the first game at home against Wichita, but they dropped a doubleheader on Saturday. So they've got plenty going for them, but lately they have dropped 2 series in a row, and of course the Bulls hope to give them another series defeat. They are led hitting-wise by a guy who actually is hitting better than anybody else in the conference in league play, .402, junior outfielder and transfer from Oregon, Mason Lytle. He's their leader in homers and RBI and doubles as well, 10 homers, 42 RBI, and 18 doubles. 79 hits, that would be 6th in the entire country. Matt King, also a very dangerous hitter, .333, 37 RBI, and get this, 11 sacrifice flies, which leads the country. Their second leader in homers with 9, third in RBI with 35, and a .332 hitter is Caleb Hill. .306 as a team for a batting average, that is second only to East Carolina in the conference, so they can certainly hit the ball. Pitching-wise, their starting rotation doesn't jump out at you, but one guy who, if he gets the ball out of the pen late, you definitely fear is Ruger Riojas. Folks, he is 8-3 with 6 saves, and he's not a starter. 8 wins and 6 saves, so if he's getting the ball, it's a close game late, and they're probably winning. ERA is a 3.61. So that'll wrap it up here on the podcast page, and basically for me, until we're back from Yellowstone, wish me luck out there. I'll let you know if I run into Rip. All I know is it was 95 degrees in Tampa on Wednesday, and at the same time where we're headed, it was 35 and snowing. Thankfully, the snow will be out and we'll actually be experiencing lows in the 40s and highs in the 60s. I'm good with that. But special thanks to Peter DeFee Jr., who will be calling the action of the Bulls and UAB next weekend from the USF Baseball Stadium. In fact, I was there on Wednesday setting up the broadcast booth for him, making sure that everything is in line, and thanking both Peter and Jason Behringer, who will be producing all three of those broadcasts. And we hope those aren't the last three broadcasts of the year on Bulls Unlimited. Our play-by-play started back in late August with soccer, and of course we had football and volleyball and basketball and baseball and softball. We love bringing you all the sports. And hopefully I'll be back on the microphone, and Jim Lauck will join me, if so, in Clearwater. We plan on the baseball team being there, and if they are, we will be there too. But that's going to wrap it up here on the podcast page and for a bit until I'm back from vacation. Thanks for dropping by. Horns up.